Guten Tag. I want to start with two little anecdotes and then move from there into our subject, Bezus Hashem. There's a famous story told about Reb Sadia Gaon. The Chovos HaLevavos says it without the name, but other sources identify it as Reb Sadia Gaon. That it says that he used to do tshuva every day for his lack of proper respect for Hashem the previous day. Now, what do we mean by that? What we mean is as follows. We're talking about something sublime. Anybody who's been in the world of Chovos HaLevavos a little bit knows that in the Chovos HaLevavos' world, your appreciation for Hashem, your reverence for Hashem, is meant to be an ongoing process, what Avigdor Miller called a career. It's not that you appreciate what Hashem is doing for you and now you relate to him accordingly, because there's always more to be understood. There's always more appreciation to be gained, to deepen your appreciation, to deepen your awareness, to deepen your awe and reverence. So it's a constant growth process. So basically, what's being expressed here is Reb Sadia Gaon lived this way. Now, again, for us, this is obviously beyond our scope, not completely. We definitely should be living in a process of enhancing our awareness and appreciation. On the contrary, that should not be beyond our scope. But to be able to say that on a daily basis, this was such a focused effort that actually from one day to the next, he was constantly enhancing and deepening his appreciation. But to the extent that after what he knew today, he looked back with mortification at the way he related to Hashem last week. I didn't get it. Right? It's like if you there's a story that they tell, a sweet anecdote that they tell about a person who was becoming frum. This was like 45, 50 years ago. And in all the different processes of his becoming frum, he kept on hearing the name Reb Moshe Feinstein, halachic angle, hashkafa, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a legendary name. Just he was actually still alive. You could actually go see him. So this fellow, they're hearing again and again, Reb Moshe Feinstein from all directions, all his rebbes, et cetera. He said, let me go actually meet him. So he went to the yeshiva in Manhattan and he came into Daven Shachris there. And apparently there was a lot going on, and there were also different people circling and collecting money. Now, was approached by a slight old man who came over to him and extended his hand like this. So it was Reb Moshe, right? Reb Moshe saw a stranger walk into the Beis Medrash. He came over to extend a handshake. This person saw an older man coming over to him like this. He took a quarter out of his pocket and handed it to him. So Reb Moshe understood what happened. He just told him politely, "Thank you very much." And he put the quarter in his pocket and he went back to his place. Afterwards, when this fellow finished davening Shachris, he wanted to find out, okay, where's Rabbi Feinstein? They pointed him out. That was the old man he had given a quarter to. He wanted to bury himself. I think it was fine. Whatever the case is, that's the point that I'm trying to bring out, that sometimes you relate to somebody and you're like, had I known it was you? So Reb Sadia Gaon actually brought this out with a real life example that he had. He used to travel incognito, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Like anonymously. It was a common thing. Many people used to do it at Gullus. He used to travel. He was a world famous figure, just that it was before the days of pictures. People may have known his writings, known about his rulings, known about his teachings, but they didn't know what he looked like. They never seen him. So he was able to travel anonymously without being identified, even in places where he was a household name. So he once came to a certain inn and okay, he set himself up, and the inn was a nice frum man who related very nicely to everybody. And Sadia Gaon got the same pleasant treatment that everybody else got. Then it happened to be that a merchant who was from Reb Sadia Gaon's area happened to be passing through the area. And he saw him sitting there along with everybody else and eating whatever it was. And he said, "You know who's here? Reb Sadia Gaon." Horuka started, and people started flooding the word spread, and people started flooding the inn, and it went through the night, people trying to talk to him in lines and every whole balagan. Finally, when the balagan subsided, so the innkeeper came over to him, begged him for forgiveness. He said, "I'm sorry, I didn't relate to you right." So the guy said, "What do you mean? You treated him very nicely. No complaints." He said, "I treated you the way I treat all my guests. I didn't realize I was dealing with the Gadol Hador." So the guy took that to heart. And he actually felt this way toward Hashem. And that's how the way the Chol HaShavuos frames it is, as he deepened his appreciation for Hashem, he felt like, "Wow, yesterday I really, or last week, or whatever it is, I really didn't relate right. I wasn't relating to Hashem according to." I guess he also knew in advance that he'd feel the same way in 3 weeks from now. But
no patience or whatever. And our time wanted very much to have a meeting with him. And so he disguised himself, he dressed himself up, and he went to and he came in and he said he's a businessman from wherever he comes from. And they asked him about a shiloh or something. And so, he spoke to him a little bit, and he told him something about Torah that he was learning about. And when they finished, so the Shabbatari said, "For a businessman, this is very good for me."
Very good. Shkoyach, shkoyach. So, same idea, same idea. What do I want out of this story? What do I want out of this story? If we connect to, obviously, this is a story that's way over our heads, and that's fine, but let's connect to it. But what I really want out of the story is a bit of a different point. It's another dimension on tshuva. I mean, usually when we talk about tshuva, we talk about what are the things that I've done wrong, and let me set them right. But the truth is that that is one element of tshuva. We'll call it the most immediate element of tshuva. We'll call it first aid tshuva. But tshuva really goes deeper than that. Tshuva, at its deeper core, is Hashem saying, "I want you closer to me, and you could be closer to me. The shame to keep yourself distant." Now, the most immediate expression of that is when a person has done something wrong and distanced themselves from Hashem. But there's a lot of tshuva relevant for people who didn't do anything wrong. Hashem, it's the same call. I want you closer to me. I want a closer relationship with you. And to this effect, I'll cite another anecdote, if you call it that, a very interesting letter from the Rambam that appears in Pirkei Avos. It's not actually any of the Rambam's ksavim, but it appears in Pirkei Avos in the standard Yochanan Bayaz Pirkei Avos on the side, on the margin, that somebody wrote the Rambam an interesting question. He said, "Yom Kippur is coming, and I have to say vidui. I have a problem. All the averas that are listed in the vidui I haven't done in this last year. What am I supposed to do? Should I lie to Hashem?" So that was actually the answer to the question. It says, "Shkar, I can't lie to Hashem. I didn't do any of it." So apparently, this person wasn't just a nobody who you snicker at hearing that. Apparently, the Rambam took him seriously. Responds to him, "Achi Anilbav, my conscientious brother." But what the Rambam writes, he writes very startling words. He said, "If you would really appreciate the level, the depth of our obligation to this great God," he says, "you would realize that a day doesn't go by that you don't transgress everything on the list." That's what the Rambam says. What's that supposed to mean? Those are very concrete things that it says there that, I can tell you I haven't done them. So what does that mean? But it's coming back to our point, and here's where I want to take it to the next step. And this was the point that Avigdor Miller used to stress time and time again. We aren't here to not do wrong things. We're here to grow. We're here to make something out of about ourselves. We're here to take advantage of the blank check called life. We're given a neshama. A neshama is, we'll use the word, godly material that you can make out of it such an awesome being that will then be you for all of eternity. Don't sell yourself short. Worse tragedy than Averis is a missed opportunity of life. And here is where I'll cite the Rambam's elaboration on what he said. Rambam says that you have to understand that all the mitzvahs of the Torah are really meant to be viewed as concepts that have finer applications and finer applications and finer applications. So let's say, for example, let's take one. I can tell I'm going to be revealing my madrigas today. I try to keep my accomplishment secret, but now I'm going to actually put it out in the open. I did not kill anybody this year. Kept track every day, never killed anybody. So I don't have to worry about it. But what do Chazal tell us? Chazal tell us that there are some subtler kinds of killing, right? Embarrassing somebody. Now, let's understand. If a person embarrasses somebody, they aren't killed by Beis Din, right? It's a machlokes rishonim. It's a very interesting machlokes in the rishonim. Does it have a din of yehoreg val yavar? You have to let yourself be killed rather than kill somebody. So do we say that about embarrassing? Or is it not quite that? Meaning, the idea being, Chazal call it murder, meaning to say it's a finer level. For a refined person, he should be experiencing that as murder. And we're taking it a whole step further. You should feel taboo. You should feel repulsed by the thought of embarrassing someone. Then it can go further and further and further. I'll share with you one of what have I what I consider one of my favorite stories, which takes it to the next level. I probably told this story here. If I did, please bear with me. I always said that I don't claim not to be repetitious. Guilty of that. But this was a story with Reb Leib Gurewitz, the Rosh Yeshiva of Gates Eden. I'll say parenthetically, Reb Leib Gurewitz was the son-in-law of Eliyahu Lapiyan. Reb Eliyahu Lapiyan came to, I think it was Kelm, that where it was, looking for a son-in-law, or looking for a husband for his daughter. He said he wants the top mensch in the yeshiva. And apparently he was named as the top mensch in the yeshiva. But whatever it is, listen to what happened. So he was the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Chosh of the Gates Eden Yeshiva, one of the distinguished Rosh Yeshivas. And apparently, what sometimes went on, late at night when already there weren't rebbeim in the yeshiva, and there would be these, bantering between the older guys and the younger guys. And apparently, it was like a minig that the way it worked was the older guys would lock themselves in the library, no tzitzis, and the younger guys would try to find all kinds of ways to get themselves in. That was the recreation. That's what went on. Tricks and this and that. Okay, fine. So one night, Reb Leib Gurewitz, it's late at night, he's learning at home, and he needed a certain sefer. He knows that the sefer is available in the yeshiva library. So he lives right next door, comes over to the yeshiva library, tries the door, it's locked. Surprised, he didn't know of such a policy, and he's the Rosh Yeshiva, right? He hears voices inside, he knocks on the door, and inside, there's some of the older guys who had locked the door to keep the younger guys out. So one of them calls out, "Who's there?" So he said, he was like a little surprised. "Who are these people? What's going on?" Leib Gurewitz. The people inside, they figured out what was happening. Must be the younger guys mimicking the Rosh Yeshiva in order to try to get in. So they said, yeah, we know. You go back home." He's out there and he's trying to figure out what's happening. And he's like, I just want to save her." "No, we know, we know. Go back home." Back and forth, he's really confused until finally inside it starts dawning on some of the guys inside that apparently it's really him. Right? And the question is, now what? Right? Here is the most embarrassing moment in their lives. But what are you going to do? They had to open the door. They opened the door, and you know what they saw? He was standing like a few steps back with his hand over his eyes. They wouldn't see who they are. Gave them room to be able to pass by, get out of sight. And he stood there like that until they were all gone. That's taking the Issa of like Tirzach to the next level.
God.
So, yeah. So someone asked me, what about their chinuch? You know what?
They got
This is much more powerful chinuch. That's right. That's right. That is taking the like Tirzach to the next level. Or the famous story about Rabbi Kiva Eiger. The great story of Rabbi Kiva Eiger, that he had a whole table full of guests at his Lel HaSeder. Beautiful white tablecloth, beautifully set. And then one of the guests tipped over his cup of wine. And Rabbi Kiva Eiger, with his brilliant mind, processed it so quickly, almost as it was happening, he tipped over his own and said, "Table is shaking." Same idea, the same point. This is like Tirzach to the next level. It goes on and on. We understand. This Rabbi Dezara, that also. Willing to say in front of everybody, I haven't been guilty of idolatry this year. But if we take the concept of idolatry and take it further and further, are there competing agendas in your life with Avodas Hashem? That is a question that has no answer. It's an endless question.
Well, it's always used to say you always are relying on something. So, for example, you could be relying on the Shem and the doctor. Like,
Oh, so
you know,
you're
like you are always relying on something, and it's sometimes very difficult to get to the root of what you're really relying on. And often it is not entirely on the
not
Shem.
entirely Hashem. So you're coming with the Chovas HaLevavos's Chumrah, right? Where he calls that Avodah Zarah B'Shituf, as though he's like worshiping two. Now, does he mean that literally? Obviously, it's the same concept that we were saying. There are more refined levels and more refined levels and more refined levels. So now, and we need to be doing basically the Rambam's message is you need to be doing tshuva about all of that. So here I have to ask a question. Does this actually mean, this basically means that we have no hope of getting out of the quicksand of Aveira. If we're saying that the definition of Aveira goes, right, just keeps on expanding and expanding and expanding to more and more refined levels, so we know in advance, no matter what we do, we're still going to be doing Aveiras.
You can look at that and you could get so depressed, right?
Exactly. That's my
So,
question.
should you look at it and have more opportunities next year to do better? Like, doesn't mean return and not necessarily like beat yourself over the head for everything that you missed?
Oh, okay. So I'd like to say that what you just, I hope I could say that what you just expressed is perhaps a reflection of what we've been trying to give over in these shiurim for these last years. Meaning exactly. That's exactly the point. When we talk about tshuva, in the simple level, it's you did something concrete that you know is wrong, fix it. But on the more refined level, tshuva is the understanding that tshuva is not necessarily about guilt. It's about the understanding that there's always more to do. You can grow very great and there will still be more to do. Is it because it's an impossible goal? No, it's because that is exactly how Hashem set it up. I wanted to give meaning to your life. And therefore, I will always hold for you. So you might think, well, no matter where I get, there's still going to be more. That means I can't become perfect. No. Perfect means the next level, and then the next level, and then the next level. Or if you want to put it into the word we use these days, growth. That's what it's about. That is the deeper, more refined level of tshuva. That is the message of Hashem telling us. It's not just about you did something wrong, fix it. It's about an ongoing consciousness of what can I do to get closer? What can I do to make more out of myself? What can I do to give Hashem more nachas? And then, you know what? You may come to a place where 10 years from now, you look back here, let's say, have the person who after he's been alive for 600 years and he got to a place where every word of Shema Esrei has kavanah, practiced word after word, right? And now he has kavanah in every single word of Shema Esrei. Now, at the beginning of his process, when he thought about having kavanah in 2/3 of Shemoneh Esrei, he said, wow, that would be a great accomplishment. Now, at the end of his process, he thinks back about lack of kavanah for a third of Shemoneh Esrei, and he thinks that's mortifying, which is true. Which is true. Is it a great accomplishment to have kavanah in 2/3 of Shemoneh Esrei, or is it mortifying not to have kavanah in a third? Answer is, we want to be constant. This is the idea. It's not mortifying to be lacking. It's not mortifying to have to grow, to have to improve. On the contrary, did we say this here last week? The neshama is actually a perfect being. In order to give our lives meaning, Hashem tacked on faults, shortcomings, weaknesses in order to give us the opportunity to create our own perfection. Neshama is perfect. If Hashem would just leave it in its natural state, Hashem is a perfect being. But part of the whole purpose of coming into this world, part of the overarching chesed that Hashem did for us is, I want you, I made you as the most perfect being there is, outside of Hashem, of course. But the neshama of the Jew is the most perfect being there is. But Hashem said, I want you to be even more perfect. How can you be even more perfect than that? That you be the one who accomplishes that perfection of your neshama. And therefore, Hashem puts us into a process. Therefore, it's so important to understand that as you keep on hearing about higher levels and higher levels, it's not about, like you just said, it's not about beating ourselves up that we're not there now. It's about the understanding that even when you reach the most sublime levels, you'll still see more to do, because that's the way Hashem set it up. On the contrary, it's not a bidyevet. This is the way Hashem wants it to work. So when we talk about the whole system of the Yamim Neroim, don't limit it to, well, let's see, what are the things that I did, the cut and dried wrong things that I didn't do tshuva for them. But understand the Yamim Neroim as an opportunity where Hashem is saying, here is the time of the year where I'm offering you the opportunity and urging you to look further, look greater, think bigger, become greater. Where do you become greater? You become greater in the life that you have now by focusing on the core elements of avodah of that life and bringing it to the next notch. Look at your life setup, your life circumstances. What are the challenges in that life circumstances? What are the most important things you need to be accomplishing in that life circumstances in terms of relationships, in terms of what's going on at home? And decide, I'm going to put that much more effort into these areas, the areas that I'm already working with, the areas that I already consider my central areas. There's more greatness to be had. There's more sensitivity to be gained in terms of the people in my life. There's more kindness I could be doing proactively toward the people around me. You don't necessarily have to start thinking about creating a whole chesed organization. If you can do that, great. But realize that some of the most magnificent accomplishments in Hashem's eyes are the edifices that you build in the immediate relationships that you have around you. Realize that that's really where the events of Olam Hazeh are at. Those are the red letter headlines in Hashem's eyes. All the big world events, those are background. Those are background. And to be constantly moving forward, to be constantly with that mindset of how can I make more out of this? Well, we call life a once in a lifetime opportunity. I guess we call it a once in history opportunity. But like we said before, the blank check. And if we want to give it a little bit more focus, so the thing when we talk about growth is a very, very broad term. Talk about growth, I can quickly list 75 areas that perhaps you should start working on, right? But Victor Miller broke it down into three fundamental areas. Three fundamental areas. He said that we have the area of we call Shleimus Hadas, Shleimus Hamidas, and Bechira B'Toiv. I'll elaborate briefly on each one just to give focus. Shleimus Hadas means perfection of the mind. Perfection of the mind, meaning we're here in this world to gain certain awarenesses. We're here in this world to gain as tangible an awareness of Hashem as we can. This is an area that encompasses many areas of avodah. Tefillah is that, and just in general, the focus of Shivisi Hashem HaNegi Yisami, that's really what Rosh Hashanah is all about. Rosh Hashanah is what we're calling the root of tshuva, right? We get busy with the details of tshuva afterwards, but the root of tshuva is Rosh Hashanah. When I say in my mind, I'm putting myself back into a world of Hashem Melech, that Hashem Melech is the reality all around me, and that I might have gotten distracted. My consciousness might have drifted throughout the year. But Rosh Hashanah is a time when I'm refocusing. I want to live in a world where it's just about me and Hashem, an interactive, dynamic reality of me and Hashem, where I see Hashem in my life. I experience Him in the chasadim of my life. I experience Him in the functioning of my body. I experience Him. I experience His care when I eat something that tastes good. My health. I feel Him challenging me when the siyunis come up. I feel Him making a call to me. And in general, just to be aware of Him. Shleimus Hadas, awareness, walking through the street with nothing going on and focusing on the fact that right now He's intensely focused on me with care, and to try to make that reciprocal. I feel it also. I'm focused on you also. Shleimus Hadas, how much we can make Hashem into more of a reality in our own minds with all the different areas that that comes into. It includes tefillah, it includes bitachon, it includes Yiras Hashem, Avas Hashem, Hakaras HaTov Hashem, etc. For men, it also includes the whole field of Limud Torah. Torah attitudes is also included in this. Having the attitudes that Hashem wants you to have, having the sensitivities that Hashem wants you to have. So that's one area of growth. So to figure out what's a step that I can take forward in that area. Other area of growth is we're calling Shleimus HaMidas, the understanding that Midas, also here, it's not a response to a problem. I'm not acting nicely, I have to improve my Midas. No. Enhancing, perfecting, and further perfecting, and further refining our Midas is one of the central agendas of our life. There's always more to do. This is also a big subject, obviously, but it's easy enough to implement without too much elaboration. What are steps that I can take? Where are areas of focus that I can take in terms of furthering my midas, enhancing my midas? The last area is what we call Bechira B'Toyev. Here we'll elaborate briefly on another subject that really deserves a lot of elaboration. Bechira B'Toyev, choosing good. The concept of Bechira is generally, you say, superficialized as a verb. It's only understood at surface level, meaning when you're facing test, good or bad, you have to choose good. But really, in this, from Avigdor Miller, based on Slabodka, developed into the whole field of that. No, Bechira is the essence of our lives. It's a koyach you want to be utilizing proactively on a constant basis. Meaning, can it say this in a few different ways. One way that Rav Avigdor Miller said it is the more refined level of Avodas Hashem is not Bechira between good and bad, but Bechira between good and better. Or another way to put it is Bechira between nothing and good. This is already something that mamish becomes a moment-to-moment business. What opportunities for Shleimus are there at this moment? There always are. Where can I? What do you mean? I'm just walking somewhere. There's nothing happening right now. What opportunities for Shleimus are there? But this comes back to what we said before. There are things you can think about to perfect yourself. Emunah, focusing on Chesed Hashem in your life. Focusing stuff, identifying the kindnesses in your life. These are ways to utilize blank spaces of time. But the next stage is things that happen throughout the day. Anything that happens to you throughout the day is an opportunity to choose good. Give one example. You pass by a person in the street. It's a little bit of consciousness, a big smile, and a good morning with the person's first name. You've turned that encounter into great profit. Anytime you're interacting with a person, it can be a technical interaction. If you put a moment of thought into how can I make this person come away from this interaction with a good feeling, with a better feeling? So you're actually turning all these things into opportunities. And certainly, when we talk about being challenged, let's say somebody is challenging you, somebody's provoking you, any nisayon, learn to translate nisayon for opportunity. It's the opportunity for growth in this situation. Someone's challenging me. I have the opportunity to not respond. I have the opportunity to keep being kind. This is turning nisayon into opportunity. That is choosing good. So we're talking about developing a mindset. We'll call it the Bechira mentality, Bechira of looking to identify what are the areas of growth, the area, the opportunities of Shlemus that any situation in life, that any life circumstance holds. Rabbi Avigdor Miller would quote the Maseiach Yesharim, who says, "Kol inyanei ha'olam nisayon nisayon la'adam." Everything about life is a nisayon. So we understand that in the broad sense, like he himself goes out to say, wealth is a nisayon with its opportunities and challenges. Poverty is a nisayon with its opportunities and challenges. Health, illness. But Rabbi Avigdor Miller said that the Maseiach Yesharim was very, very careful with his choice of words. And if he said kol inyanei ha'olam, he meant kol inyanei ha'olam. Everything about life is a nisayon. The nisayon as in opportunity. The sun is shining in the morning, that's an opportunity. To feel Hashem pouring down that warmth. Breakfast is an opportunity. I'm going to use the breakfast to sense Hashem's care for me, to grow closer to Hashem through my breakfast. So it's the mindset. When we talk about Bechira B'Toyv, we're talking about a mindset of identifying the opportunities, mamish, any situation in life. Like we said before, to view a moment, to view a circumstance, etc., as an open check. This is really the call. This is really the call. It ties back to what we discussed last week, that what's happening in Elul and Rosh Hashanah is that Hashem is coming and telling, saying, I gave you an unbelievable gift called life. And it's very important to me that you utilize it right. Take advantage. Take advantage. Don't shortchange yourself. Don't make $10 out of what could have been a million. So, Be'ezus Hashem, we should utilize again these days of Hashem's closeness, of Hashem cluing us into this. Take advantage of us of it and get ourselves to the place that Hashem would love to see us in. Gutevach. Thank
Thank you. Call to
what?
Oh,